Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Vata's War by Elizabeth Moon. Vata's War, Book 1. Trading in Danger, Part 1. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Jonathan Watkins, Christopher Graybill, Barbara Pinolini, Thomas Penny, Tim Gatman, Andy Clements, Lily Beacon, Michael Glenn, Stephen Carpenter, Terrence Aselford, Michael John Casey, James Lewis, Mort Shelby, Ken Jackson, Lily David, Sonny Lasky, Joe Brack, Dylan Lynch, Richard Rowan, Tom Simpson, Tim Carlin, Casey Platt, and Colleen Delaney.
Kailara Vata came to attention in front of the Commandant's desk. One sheet of flat copy lay in front of him, the print too small for her to read upside down. She had a bad feeling about this. On previous trips to the Commandant's office, she had been summoned by an icon popping up on her desk comp. Those had all been benign visits, the result of exams passed in the top 5%, or prizes won, and the Commandant had greeted her with the most thawed of his several frosty expressions. Today, though...
Cadet Vata?
Sir!
The Commandant's left eyelid drooped ominously. Rumor had it that if his left eyelid actually closed, cadets died. She wasn't sure she believed that, but she hoped she wasn't about to find out.
I won't even ask what you thought you were doing. I don't want to know. I don't care.
Sir?
Don't play the innocent with me, cadet. You are a disgrace to the service.
Kai almost shook her head in confusion. The Commandant brandished a sheet of paper.
Going outside the chain of command like this, embarrassing the service.
Sir!
She was caught between the etiquette that required silence until she was given leave to speak, and a desperate need to find out what had the Commandant's eyelid hovering ever nearer to its mate.
You have something to say, cadet. Do go ahead.
Sir, with the greatest respect, this cadet does not know to what the Commandant is referring.
Oh, you can play the innocent all you want, cadet, and maintain that formal falderal. But you don't fool me. Well, since you insist, let's try this. Do you recall the name Mandy Rocher?
Yes, sir. Second year, third squad.
Then you can think of no reason why I might connect that name and yours?
Sir, I helped Cadet Rocher locate a Miss Narii Chaplain last weekend when Chaplain Oser was away.
A dim glimmer of what might be the problem came to her, but she couldn't believe there would be that much fuss about that.
And just how did you locate a Miss Narii Chaplain, Cadet?
I called my mother, sir.
You called your mother and told your mother to do what, cadet?
I asked her if her friend Jucha could refer me to a Miss Narii chaplain near the academy.
For what reason?
I told her that one of the underclassmen was overdue for confession and the academy chaplain was out of town.
You didn't tell her what he wanted to confess?
Sir, I don't know what he had to confess. I only know that he was in distress and needed a chaplain, and I thought it would save trouble if I just Got him one.
You're not Ms. Naria yourself?
No, sir. We're Modulans.
Actually, they were Sephiric Cyclans, but that was such a small sect that nobody recognized it, and Modulans were respectable and undemanding. The Commandant's eyelid twitched upward a millimeter. Kai hoped this was a good sign.
You had no idea that what he wanted to confess concerned the honor of the service?
Kai's jaw dropped. She forced it back up.
No, sir!
That he made a formal complaint to this Ms. Narii, in addition to his confession, which the chaplain took immediately to the Bureau of War, where it fell into the hands of a particularly noxious bureaucrat whose sister just happens to be on the staff of the Wide Exposure Program, so that I found myself on the horn very early this morning with Grand Admiral Tasliki, who is not amused at all? The bureaucrat spoke on Wide Exposure's Night Affairs Program at 0115. Clever timing, that. And this morning, all the media channels had something on it. That's only the beginning.
Sir!
So even if you did not know, Cadet Vata, what Cadet Rocher wanted to confess, you may be able to grasp that by going outside the chain of command, you have created a very, very large public relations problem, embarrassing the entire general staff, the Bureau of War, and, last but not least, me personally.
Yes, sir.
Kylara could understand that. She could not have anticipated it, and now she was consumed by curiosity about what exactly Mandy Rocher had said. They weren't allowed access to things like Wide Exposure except on weekends.
You are an embarrassment, Cadet Vata. Many, many people want your hide tacked on the wall and your head on a pike. The only reason I don't is that I have observed your progress through the Academy, and you have so far been, within the limits of your ability, an exemplary cadet. When I thought you'd done it on purpose, I was going to throw you to the wolves. Now, since I suspect that you simply fell for a sob story, and your entire barracks knows you have a soft spot for underdogs and lost lambs, I'm simply going to take the hide off your back in strips and see your resignation on my desk by 1500 hours this afternoon.
Sir?
Now the eyelid came all the way back up.
Cadet Vata, you have, unwittingly perhaps, created a major mess with implications that could damage the service for years. Your ass is grass, one way or the other. You could be charged, for instance, with that string of articles beginning with 312.5. I see by your expression that you have belatedly remembered them.
She did indeed. Article 312.5 of the Military Legal Code. Failure to inform superior officer in a timely manner of potentially harmful personnel situations. Article 312.6. Failure to inform superior officer in a timely manner of breaches of security involving sensitive personnel. Article 312.7, failure to inform superior officer in a timely manner of... She was majorly doomed.
I wasn't thinking, sir.
Fairly obvious. What did you think might happen?
I thought... Mandy, Cadet Rocher, was so upset that day... I thought if he could see a chaplain and confess or whatever, he'd settle down until the regular chaplain got back. He had those exams coming up, and they were group graded. If he didn't do well, his squad would suffer for it.
What you don't know, Cadet, is that Rocher had been avoiding the regular chaplain's cycle. His so-called emergency was of his own making. He wanted to talk to someone outside the academy, and you made that possible.
Yes, sir.
And you didn't tell anyone at all about this, did you?
No, sir.
Easier to get forgiveness than permission. Is that what you were thinking?
No, sir. Not really.
The Commandant's eyelid quivered.
I am so reassured. Cadet Vata, it is unfortunate that you have to suffer for a generous impulse, but we need naval officers with brains as well as kind hearts. You will not return to class. You will, as I said, present a letter of resignation, which does not mention any of this, and cites personal reasons as the cause, by 1500 hours. Sooner, Cadet, is better than later. But first, you will go to signals and make contact with your family, so that you will be able to leave quietly and quickly when that resignation is approved.
The look he gave her now was warmer by a few degrees, but still not cordial.
Staff will pack up your things. They will be at the gate when you depart.
Yes, sir.
And yes, you infer correctly that you are not to speak to any of your former associates. Your departure will be explained as seems most expedient for the service.
Not speak to anyone? Not to Mira or Lizette? Not to Hal?
You are dismissed.
Sir.
Kai saluted, rotated correctly on her right heel, and left his office, her mind a blur. Signals. She knew where Signals was. She passed without really seeing an enlisted man in the passage, and another at the head of the stairs down to the classroom level. Halfway to Signals, her mind clicked on long enough to panic. She had to call her family, tell her father and, oh heavens, her mother, that she was disgraced, dismissed. Her brothers would all, her cousins, Uncle Tomas, Aunt Grace, worse than Uncle Tomas, who would say again all she had said when Kai first went to the academy, laced with, "I told you so." She felt the tremor in her hands and fought to still it. Now, for this short period of time, she was still a cadet. And now, for this short period of time, she would act like one. Even as the dream went down in smoke and ashes, even then, her stomach looped wildly once and settled. At the door of Signals, a uniformed guard stared past her.
Cadet Vada, on order of the Commandant.
He stepped aside.
Cadet Vada at Signals, sir.
Commander Terry had the watch in Signals. His expression suggested that her family were loathsome toads, and she was toad spawn.
Vada.
Sir.
Which contact number?
Vada Enterprises. They have a relay.
We would prefer that you make a direct call.
She knew her father's mobile number, of course, but he'd often said he hated the damn thing and would leave it on the bedside table as often as not. That meant her mother might pick it up, the last person she wanted to talk to. Vada Enterprises would ring his skull phone, which he couldn't take off. She didn't have that number. No one did but the communications computer at VE. She rattled off the string for the mobile and mentally visualized the arc of blue, best fortune of the Saphirin Cyclin wheel, as Commander Terry nodded to the rating who entered the string.
Name?
What?
The name of the person you are calling.
Sir, my father, sir. Gerard Avondetten Vada. But if my mother...
You are permitted one call to one recipient, Cadet Vada.
Commander Terry picked up the headset and held the receiver to his ear. Kai waited, the blue arc fading in her mental eye. Then his hand twitched.
This is Commander Terry at the Naval Academy. I need to speak to Gerard Avondetten Vada. Kailara Vada will speak with you.
He held the headset out to Kai. She was not even allowed to speak from a privacy booth. She had known the call would be recorded, but at least a semblance of normal courtesy would have helped. She could feel tears swelling now, stuffing her nose. She fought for calmness as she took the headset and put it on. Enough of this. She turned her back on Commander Terry without permission.
Dad, listen.
Kai, what's wrong? Are you hurt?
Dad, no, I'm fine. Please listen. I have to leave. I have to leave today. Can you send someone to the gates?
Kai, what is it?
Dad, please. I have to resign. I have to leave. I don't have any money for transport. I need a way to get home.
What? Kai, listen. Whatever it is, we can help. Let me call the Commandant.
No, Dad. Don't do that. I'll explain when I get there. Only help me get there, please.
When do you need transport?
Kai looked at the chronometer. Only 0935. Surely she could write a resignation that would satisfy the Commandant by noon.
By noon, if that's possible.
For you, Kailara Mish, 5 minutes would be possible. Only tell me, has someone hurt you?
Later, she would consider whether Mandy Rocher had hurt her. Now, she wanted only to get away. And even if Mandy had, she had made it possible. It was her own fault.
It's not that, Dad.
Good. Because if any one of those fish eaters had laid a finger on you...
Dad, please? Noon?
At the gates, on Vada Honor.
Vada Honor.
Kai handed the headset back to Commander Terry. He took it without comment and gave a curt nod.
Get on your way, Vata.
Yes, sir.
She needed a place to write the resignation. If she was forbidden to return to her quarters, where could she go? Outside, she found the answer, of sorts. The wiry, gray-haired senior NCO who had been her year's nemesis in the first four quarters, and an increasingly valuable resource ever since. She had not, she remembered, taken MacRobert's advice on the matter of Mandy Rocher.
Commandant's library is empty, Cadet Vana. Fully equipped.
Right.
She would not cry. She would certainly not cry in front of this man. He turned to lead the way, and she followed.
Right mess you made of things.
Yes.
I won't say I told you so.
He just had, of course, but she didn't answer.
I dare say you feel bad enough already.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I thought so. Here you are.
Kai had never been in the Commandant's private library before. The long, narrow room held not only racks of ordinary books and journals, but shelves of ancient books like those in her family's oldest house. A long table ran down the middle of the room, and at one end someone had set out a stack of white paper and a selection of pens.
It's appropriate that a resignation of this type be handwritten. You can use the voice recorder or the keyboard to rough it out, but it's better to stick to the simplest format.
Someone had also laid out a copy of Naval Etiquette, Essentials for Officers, and the hand reader.
Thank you.
It was still not 1000 hours. Her world had ended less than an hour ago. She had another couple of hours.
What time did you arrange transport for?
Noon.
I'll see that your gear is at the gate by 11:30.
Thank you.
Kai felt unreal still, as if this were a dream, as if she were floating a few centimeters off the floor.
I'll leave you alone. When you're finished, you can leave the resignation here.
The Commandant said on his desk.
That's right, and so it will be. Just tell me when you're finished.
MacRobert nodded and went out. Kai put Naval Etiquette, Essentials for Officers, into the reader and found that someone had already bookmarked the section on resignations. Voluntary and involuntary, sections of the legal code relating to, forms of appropriate and inappropriate. She paused there and looked at the appropriate wording for resigning one's commission while in command of a ship, while in command of a flotilla, while between commands, while on leave,
while suffering an incurable mental or physical condition precluding further duty. That's me. Suffering from an incurable tendency to trust people in trouble and help lame dogs.
Kai turned to the keyboard. She didn't trust her voice to use the speech-activated system, and copied in the phrasing, I, name, hereby resign my cadetship, commission, for reasons of reason.
I, Kailara Evangeline Dominique Vada, hereby resign my cadetship for reasons of overwhelming stupidity and weak sentimentality. For reasons of totally unfair blame for something I didn't do. For reasons of a mental illness called gullibility? Soft-heartedness?
No. Tears blurred her vision suddenly. She blinked them back. Memory stirred, bringing her Mandy Rocher's image as he sat, shoulders hunched, hands trembling a little, telling her that he had to find a chaplain. He really did. Had his hands trembled with secret laughter that she was so easy to fool? Had he looked down to hide the scorn in his eyes? He was such a little... She searched her vocabulary for a sufficiently descriptive phrase. Insignificant, forgettable, boring, pitiful, non-entity. And to lose her cadetship because of him. She would get him someday. Vengeance, said her grandmother, was an unworthy goal, but this was a special case. Surely this was a special case.
I, Kailara Evangeline Dominique Vada, hereby resign from the Academy for reasons that reflect on my ability to carry out the duties of a naval officer.
Close. Not quite yet. She looked around the room, squinting to bring the titles of the old books into focus. Heron and Heron's Chronicles of the Dispersion, all 10 volumes. Her family owned 3 through 10, but 1 and 2 were very rare indeed in paper form. Cantabria's Principles of Space Warfare, evidently a first edition. She longed to pull it down and check, but was afraid to. A row bound identically in blue-gray cloth. Logbooks, the old-fashioned kind. Those would be centuries and centuries old. She got up and looked at the names on the spines. Darius II, Paleologus, Sargon, Ataturk. She felt the goose flesh come up on her arms and looked quickly at the last, least faded volume, Centaurus. Not, in fact, centuries old, not even 1 century. These were logs that the Commandant had kept, his personal logs from every ship on which he'd served. She'd once memorized the sequence on a dare. Her fingers twitched.
What did he think, feel, do, as a young man on his first ship?
She would never know. She had no right to know. The adventures she had hoped to write into such logs herself would never come her way now. She made herself step away from that shelf and look at another. History here, biography there, reference works on all the neighboring states, on the biota of First Colony, on the ecology of water gardens.
Water gardens? The Commandant studies water gardens?
Kai stared at the screen again. For reasons of... Back to the hand reader. Alternate phrasing. Due to. Clumsy. Never say more than you need, her father had said. Her mother had muttered that Kylara always said more than she needed. She'd stop that right now.
I, Kylara Evangeline Dominique Vada, hereby resign from the Academy for personal reasons.
Short and not sweet. Nothing about this was sweet. She stared at the screen a long time, glaring at the tiny blue words on the gray screen. Then she moved the paper over and copied the words very carefully, in her best script, the handwriting of a properly brought-up child and good student. Panic gripped her when she had signed it. She did not want to do this. She could not do this. She must do this. She looked at the time. 10:22:38. It was hard to believe destroying her life had taken so little time. MacRobert again, this time with a large silver tray. A teapot, incongruously splotched with big pink roses. A pair of matching cups, gold-rimmed, on saucers. A small plate of lemon cookies. And another of tiny, precisely cut sandwiches.
The Commandant will be joining you.
MacRobert set the tray on the end of the library table, picked up her resignation, and walked out with it. Kai sat immobile, staring at the steam rising from the teapot's spout, trying not to smell the fragrance of cookies obviously fresh from the oven, trying not to think or feel anything at all. The Commandant's entrance brought her upright to attention. He waved her back down. His left eyelid was back up where it should be, but his whole face sagged.
You've resigned. Sit down. Pour out, will you?
Kai carried out the familiar ritual, something she didn't have to think about, and handed him his cup of tea. He waited and nodded at her. She poured one for herself. It was good tea. He took a sandwich and gave her a look. She took one, too. He ate his sandwich in one bite and sipped his tea.
It's a shame, really. Here I had a perfectly good excuse to remove your internal organs and hang them from the towers, make an example of you. It's my job, and I'm supposed to relish it. Or why did I ask for it? But you were a good cadet, Mistress Vata, and I know you intended to be a good officer.
Then why did you make me resign?
That was a question she must never ask. Kai knew that much.
In consideration of your past performance, and on my own responsibility, I've chosen to let you keep your insignia and wear it as you depart. I trust your sense of honor not to wear it again.
No, sir.
The bite of sandwich she had taken stuck in her throat. She had not even considered that he might demand their removal. The class ring on her finger.
Hal's ring, as he wore hers, suddenly weighed twice as much.
It's hard for you to believe now, I'm sure, but you will survive this. You have many talents, and you will find a use for them. Thank you for not making this harder than it had to be. Your resignation was masterful.
The sandwich bite went down, a miserable lump. Kai wasn't hungry. She couldn't be hungry. She ate the rest of the sandwich out of pure social duty.
I understand you've arranged transport for noon?
Yes, sir.
You don't have to say sir, Mistress Vata.
I can't help it.
Well, then, I would advise that you go out at 11:30 while classes are in session. MacRobert will remain with you until your transport arrives to deal with any problems that may come up. Since the story broke on the early news, the media have been camped at our gates. It'll be days before that dies down.
For a moment, Kai had been furious that he had thought she'd do something wrong, but the mention of media steadied her. Of course they would be trying to get in, trying to interview cadets. Of course the daughter of the Vata family would interest them, even if Mandy hadn't mentioned her, and someone would be bound to have a face recognition subroutine that would pop out her name.
And there's another thing.
Kai had to look at him again, had to see the expression of mingled annoyance and pity that was worse than anything he might have said directly.
The Bureau demands, I realize this isn't necessary, a statement that you will consider all this confidential and not communicate with the media.
Kai took the paper the Commandant handed her and scrawled her name on it in a rough parody of her usual careful handwriting.
You have almost an hour. MacRobert will fetch you when it's time.
He drained his cup and picked up one of the lemon cookies.
And, if you'll take advice, drink the rest of that tea and eat those sandwiches. Shock uses up energy.
He rose, nodded to her, and went out. Kai snatched the tea towel off the tray and buried her face in it. She could always claim she'd spilled the tea. She wasn't a cadet. She didn't have to tell the strict truth. She wiped her face, spread the tea towel out again, and set everything back on the tray in perfect order. No, her cup was almost full. She drank the tea. She ate another sandwich.
Disgusting body, to want tea and food at such a time.
The silent room eased her, made calm possible. She got up and paced the circuit, looking at the titles again. Then she took down the logbook labeled Darius II on the back.
Just this once. And what can they do to me if they disapprove?
When MacRobert came for her at 11:27, she was deep into the logbook and calm again. Outside, the weather had changed, as if her fortune changed it. From early morning's sunshine and puffy clouds to a dank, miserable cold rain with a gusty wind. Her luggage made a pile in the relative safety of the gateway arch. She stood in the shelter of the sentry's alcove, where she could just see the street beyond and the gaggle of reporters on the far side. She was still in cadet blue. The sentry ignored her, and MacRobert checked off her bags on a list before turning to her.
They'll be near on time?
I expect so.
MacRobert cocked his head.
Good. We'll have to frustrate the mob over there. You're not half bad, Vata. Sorry you stepped in it. Don't forget us.
How could he even suggest she might forget this? Kai's skin felt scorched with shame.
I won't.
Don't be angrier than you have to be.
I'm not.
She might be later, but now, anger was only beginning to seep toward the surface, through the shock and pain.
Good. You still have friends here, though at the moment there's a necessary distance.
He looked at the clock, 11:54.
Excuse me for a few moments. I'll be back at 1200 sharp.
Kai wondered what he was up to, but not for long. The chill, dank air, the gusts of wind, all brought back to her the enormity of her fall from grace.
She was going to have to go out there in the cold rain and pick up those bags and put them in the vehicle in front of everyone in the universe, obviously disgraced and sent away, and be driven home to her parents like any stupid brat who's messed up. Like, for instance, her cousin Stella, who had fallen in love with a Musha dealer and given him the family codes. She remembered overhearing some of that when she was 13 and telling herself she would never be so stupid. She would never disgrace the family the way Stella had. And now it was on all the news, whatever had actually been said, and it was all her fault. A huge black car whizzed past the entrance, flags flapping from its front and rear staffs, and she saw the reporters across the way turn and then rush after it. Their support van squealed into motion, turned quickly across the street, and sped after the black car. She glanced at the clock. 11:59. She stepped out of the alcove into the archway and saw a decent, middle-aged, dark blue car swerving over to stop at the archway. 1200 on the dot. Two men, the driver and escort, got out of the car. MacRobert was back and already had two of her bags in hand.
I'll help with these. Vada, you get in the car. Jim, get her trunk.
In moments, Kai was in the back seat, her luggage stowed in the trunk or beside her, and the two men were back in the car.
Take care, Vada, and remember what I said. You have friends here.
At the last moment, Kai stripped off the class ring and handed it to him.
Wait! You'll know where this should go.
She couldn't help it. She could only hope that MacRobert would get it back to him discreetly, that Hal would understand. The car moved off sedately, rejoining the traffic stream and turning at the first corner. Kai glanced to the right and saw a crowd of news vans partway down the block.
What does MacRobert want me to remember? That he was kind as well as brusque? And how stupid I was.
The Vata employees in the front seat didn't talk on their way to their first stop, the warehouse office at 56 Missolonghi. There, the escort got out, and her uncle Stavros climbed into the back seat with her.
Kai Lara, are you all right?
She did not want to come apart in front of Uncle Stavros, father of the notorious Stella.
I'm fine.
A lie, and they both knew it, but the right thing to say.
We're going over to the airfield.
That would be the private airfield, of course.
You'll be on a flight to Corley. Your parents had to run over there to take care of some business a week ago.
Kai put her mind back to work. Corley, teak plantations. Source of both wealth and problems, because the labor force knew all too well what teak extract brought on the interstellar market and felt they weren't getting enough of the profits.
Pickers or packers?
Packers. The pickers got a new contract last year, and the packers insist they add more value and need another 2% on top of the 5% increase year before last.
So, what's the quote running?
38.27, down 100 from last year. Devans come into production, though we judge their product only third rate. I think the market will be back up, but we'll see.
Kai knew her uncle had brought this up mostly to distract her, but it did make the journey easier.
What's their production base?
20,000 hectares, 5,000 8-year-olds, 5 each in 7, 6, and 4. Rumor has it they lost their entire planting 5 years ago, and all the surviving trees lost a year's maturity. Soil's good, climate's marginal.
Labor force?
Well, now, that's more of a problem for them than they want to admit, and that's where their quality falls off. They recruited from the immigrant lists, and none of them are experienced. Most of the ag-credentialed immigrants are row croppers who know nothing about trees. What I hear from the market is that their pickers are damaging the fruit, and the packers aren't tossing the damaged stuff. I suppose they're trying to make up for that year's worth of lost income.
Kai glanced out the window as the car swerved. They were nearing the private airfield now, and a truck with the blue and red Vata Transport insignia had slowed for the turn into the cargo bays. Their car sped on to the passenger entrance, paused at the check station for their driver to flash the scans, then followed the service road past the elegant little charter terminal with its tropical garden and colonnade for those departing or arriving on chartered flights, and on around past the private terminals to the Vata Transport complex, all in blue with red trim. Sitting out on the apron was the sleek little twin-engine craft in which Kylara had flown from island to island most of her life.
You can't pilot yourself today, Kai. Under the circumstances, it...
Her vision blurred. She knew she wasn't safe to pilot anything, not like this, but it still hurt to hear it.
It's Gaspard. You remember him.
She did. Gaspard Rittenauer had been her first flying instructor, though the family wasn't supposed to know that.
Let's get you aboard.
Kylara moved quickly from the car to the aircraft. Automatically, she put her feet in the right places on the step and wing and started to slide into the co-pilot seat.
You'd better ride in the passenger compartment.
I won't try to grab the controls.
It's not that, Kai. Gaspard, explain it to her. If she's going to ride up front, you'll have to take steps. I need to get back.
Kai said nothing as Gaspard finished pre-flight. He didn't explain what her uncle had meant. She sat quietly waiting. One thing she'd learned at the academy was how to wait without fidgeting. She did not even put on the co-pilot's headset. Gaspard murmured into his own voice pickup, contacting traffic control, she assumed. Then he turned to her.
Put your headset on.
Why?
You're visible up here.
It took Kai a moment to figure out what he meant. Anyone looking in, with a long lens for instance, could see her, whereas back in the passenger compartment, the smaller windows had little shades.
Oh, damn.
Kai snatched the headset. It wouldn't be enough, she knew. She shrugged out of her uniform jacket and tossed it onto the seat behind. Gaspard pointed behind her. A Vata crew flight jacket, matching Gaspard's, hung there. She pulled it on quickly, then twisted to see if she could shut the window shades back in the passenger compartment, but someone had already done that.
They'll assume a regular flight crew, unless you're sitting there in cadet blue, with insignia.
Kai fumbled at her blouse collar. She'd forgotten the collar insignia, which a long lens might be able to catch. They were embroidered. She would have to turn the collar under. She did that while he signaled the ground crew and let the plane roll forward slowly.
Better.
Will the headset obscure enough of my face, though?
Kai swung the voice link up as far as possible. They were out from between the Vata hangars onto the taxiway. A single-engine yellow plane swung onto the taxiway in front of them. Kai looked down at the familiar checklist. If she was to be the co-pilot, this was what she would be doing. They moved on, passing the little terminal parking lot.
Do something that looks good.
Immediately, Kai pulled up the manual checklist and reached overhead as if going through a final pre-flight.
What I love about flying with you, Kai, is that you always react the right way. That couldn't have looked more natural if you'd rehearsed it for days.
Kai looked at Gaspard, surprised. The grin he was aiming down the center line of the taxiway looked genuine.
I spotted a fire truck in the wrong place. Now, we're going to be really exposed during takeoff and for the first hour. Since you're already up here and I entered for two crew just in case, you'll have to stay here. I know your uncle said no flying, but someone's got to be traffic watch. And if you can help...
I can help.
Good. I'll take her up. You stay on the controls with me.
Kai turned up the volume in her headset and heard traffic control give them clearance for takeoff after the little yellow plane. They paused as the yellow plane swung into position. She could see it shudder and then begin its takeoff roll. She checked the boards. This plane had every avionics gadget and an A1 autopilot perfectly capable of handling almost every contingency. But Gaspard preferred to take off and land on manual to keep his skills current.
And because it's just plain fun, there's something atavistic about shoving the throttles forward myself.
Kylara felt the same way. She loved it all, from the acceleration down the runway to the moment when they left the ground to the steep climb out over the factory district. Once they were a half hour offshore, at cruising altitude, Gaspard relaxed and pulled out his hot pack of coffee.
Well, girl, I'm not sure what anthill you kicked, or kicked you, but your father and uncle were certainly upset. You want to tell me about it?
I can't. Can't fly and talk about it anyway.
Fine. Let me finish this and I'll take it back.
He swallowed quickly and relieved Kai at the controls.
Not that I'm pushing you, you understand, but...
I had to resign from the academy.
Didn't you keep your anti-fertility implant up to date?
Not
that. I wouldn't...
Sorry. It's just... What else could make you do it? Your family's not yanking you out for some business reason.
No, I... did something stupid. It caused a stink. Such a big stink, they wanted me gone.
You? I can't imagine what big stink you could cause. You're not a bonehead like that kid who told a Miznarii priest that he was being treated unfairly and prevented from practicing his religion, and that the service was hostile to Miznarii and had a policy of putting them, how did he say it? First in danger, last in promotion? That is what I'd call a big stink.
That was my fault.
What? Your fault? How? You aren't even... Oh, shit, Kai. You were just helping someone again, weren't you? What did you do? Get him in contact with this Miznarii?
Yes.
I guess I can understand them might be peeved with you. It's all over the news, but it's not bad enough to make you resign.
They think it is.
They'll wish they hadn't. Though it may take them a while. So, you're in disgrace, is that it?
Kai caught the quick movement of Gaspard's head as he turned to look at her, and looked away, out the window, where a blanket of cloud lay between them and the east shallows.
Thing is, Kai, disgrace doesn't last forever.
It can.
Usually doesn't. Whatever stupid things you can do smart ones later.
Somehow I don't think so. When I try my hardest, that's when I do stupid things.
Gaspard looked at her.
It's not my place.
Oh, go on! Everyone else will lecture me, too.
I'm not going to lecture you.
He looked out the side window and engaged the autopilot.
Logged. All boards clear. No traffic reported or scanned. Estimated flight time, 3 hours, 15 minutes.
We'll be home in time for supper.
It had all happened too fast. She'd awakened as a senior cadet in the honor squad. She'd eaten breakfast at the head of a table of cadets, in charge of that table, reminding the lowly cads to sit straight on the edge of their chairs and take no sugar in their drinks. She'd eaten that scrap of lunch in the commandant's library as a disgraced ex-cadet. And tonight she would eat supper in the family dining room. The family disgrace come home to roost.
You want to talk about it?
Gaspard was only 10 years or so older than she was, she thought. Younger than the commandant or her father. Older than all but one of her brothers.
You know, I tried to help and it blew up in my face.
You know this kid well?
Mandy? He was in my diviso. Last year, the CAD intake officer asked me to take him under my wing. Third years get handed a CAD to babysit. Mandy was mine. He had a rough time being Miznarii, but he did fairly well.
The Miznarii considered even implants immoral modifications of the basic human, so those of their children seeking higher education were always at a disadvantage. They attended only those institutions where students had to study without implant assistance. But, as with the academy, the other students had used them before.
Did he do as well as you did?
No, but better than expected.
So, you give the kid a model he can't reach, and he asks you to do him a favor, and then he backstabs you? Think he did this just to cross you?
Kai hadn't considered one way or the other. It was betrayal, even if not intended.
I think he meant to get the Academy in trouble.
More than you?
Yes. I think he wanted to get the whole system in trouble. The War Department, the Academy, the military, maybe even Slaughter Key.
Yeah, and you were collateral damage.
Probably.
It hurt, even so. She had thought Mandy appreciated what she'd done for him. All the hours spent tutoring and rehearsing.
You want to sleep with you?
Kai felt the wave of heat up her neck.
If he did, it would have been unprofessional, well, just wrong of me to have noticed.
If? You honestly don't know.
She knew all right. She knew perfectly well why Cad Mandy Rocher had pulled off his overrobe slowly, stretching, before the underclass wrestling matches. She knew he'd wanted her. No word had been spoken. No word need be.
So he lusted after you and you repulsed him.
I didn't repulse him. I just didn't encourage him.
He could stretch all he wanted, and it did nothing for her. She had Hal in her mind's eye, and there was no comparison.
Dirty little scum.
Kai glanced at Gaspard's face. He looked like someone about to be very angry.
I'm sorry.
Not your fault. You're a good girl, Kai. You always have been. Taken advantage of, and thank all the gods you don't believe in, it went no further. You're well out of that.
I thought you thought I would be a good officer.
I did. You would have been. But a waste, in a way. Never mind. Just think of them all in their stiff, scratchy uniforms while we're flying down to the sunny Isles of Delight, out of that nasty cold.
I like the cold.
Kai did not want to think of Hal, who might be storming up the stairs to the Commandant's office to find out where she was at this very moment.
That's not what you said, other leaves.
No, but... all right. Yo-ho for the tropics.
I know it seems like the end of the world to you. That's because you're a good one and you care. But life goes on, Kai, and you'll get over this. You don't want to hear it, but it's true. Just like you didn't want to hear that there were things you couldn't do with an airplane. But that was also true.
All right, all right.
Kai stared out at the blanket of cloud. Ahead, it frayed into puffs, more and more isolated. And as they flew nearer that edge, the blue sea showed below. There to starboard, the distinctive hook shape of Main Gumbo. From this altitude, a flat outline of white surf filled in with dark vegetation. She looked sunward. The wakes of ships showed clearly as darker ripples against the even pattern. In the passage between Maine and Little Gumbo, a tanker surrounded by its attendants. Crawdad, beyond Little Gumbo, was a many-legged dark blot. An hour later, the dark blue lightened as they neared the Necklace Reefs. From cobalt through every shade of turquoise, as the water grew more shallow, until at last the ragged brown tops of the reefs broke through white surf. Corley showed at last, a dark line that thickened, surrounded by shallower water that looked from this height like bands of blue and turquoise, each shade defining a depth. They flew over the main harbor, with its guardian headlands rising sharply from the water. Surf broke white on the rocks. Kai counted two cargo ships, the Inter-Island Ferry and a thick cluster of small craft, before they were past the harbor and over the warehouses of the harbor district. Beyond those, the neat little town, with its central park, a green square, with the spire of the war memorial glinting in the sun. Corley's small commercial airfield had a scatter of small craft parked in a row. Kai knew that the daily island air service would be 2 hours behind them. Inland, Harbor Valley sloped gently toward the central ridge. Gaspard banked left, and Kailara looked down on the vast teak plantations between the coastal cliffs and the higher ridge with its mixed scrub. Not a monoculture. These were old plantations, interplanted with secondary and tertiary crops in a careful balance to maximize both production and resilience. On the far side of the ridge, she knew, were the newer plantings. She had imagined bringing Hal to meet her family on graduation leave. He was a mainlander and had never seen the Far Islands. She would have been explaining it to him, the order of the plantings, the yields of the different ages. She pushed that thought back. Ahead, the island narrowed, and the central ridge sloped abruptly down to end in a rumble of lower hills. She could see the outer reef's ruffle of surf beyond them. Taller trees, the sheltering groves of the Vata household, cloaked the landward side of the hills. Gaspard called the Vata home field as he eased their plane down, nearly countering the predictable gusts that swept between the twin hills. Kai felt her throat close. She had been able to let her mind drift while in the air, but soon she would have to face her family. She stared out the window, noticing that the Jabla trees were in bloom, pink fluffy puffs among the darker green of the Harakond and Jupal. The red tile roofs of the house and outbuildings showed among the green, with a sudden flash of light from the big pool. Nearer to the runway were the office buildings, utilitarian cream blocks topped with solar panels, but neat, with a ruffle of red and blue flowers on either side of the main door.
Give us a hand, Kai.
Kai yanked her attention back to the instruments and called out items on the checklist as Gaspard made the final approach. Kai turned her collar right side out and reached back for her uniform jacket. She was not going to come home disheveled and disorganized. By the time Gaspard had taxied to the parking line, where old George waited to hook up the tie-downs, she was ready to pass, well, not any official inspection, but any of the staff.
Ah, good to see you home. You didn't belong with the likes of them slimes anyway.
Kai knew it would do no good to tell him they weren't slimes. George, veteran of the Second War, loathed mainlanders. He had refused regen treatment for his leg because it would have meant a mainland hospital.
I'll take your bags. Your dad wants to see you right away.
He moved stiffly to the luggage compartment. Kai turned to the office building. No one was coming out to meet her. Normal.
Are they going to pretend this is normal?
The sea breeze, moist and fragrant, lay its hand on her cheek, and she wanted to yield to it, to be soothed by it. But she was no longer the child who had left here 4 years ago. Inside the front door, cooler air swirled around her. She faced a warren of desks and workstations, most occupied by obviously busy people who barely looked up as she entered. On her left, the familiar corridor led to the row of walled offices, her father's, her uncle's, her elder brother's. She hesitated a moment outside the door to her father's office. Her father looked up from his desk as she came in.
Kai Lara Beshi, you look like you must feel.
I'm all right.
No, you're not. Come here.
He came out from behind his desk and held out his arms. Kai leaned into his embrace.
I didn't know. I thought I was helping.
Shh.
He smelled of the teak plantations he must have walked around that morning, a complex scent she had known forever. His shoulder twitched.
Do you remember your fifth birthday party?
She had pushed Mina Patel into the waiting pool, and Mina had contrived to fall crooked and cut her head on the one place the rim's padding had worn away, because she'd kept her hair bows on, in spite of Kai's advice to take them off or they'd get wet. And it had been for a good cause, because Mina had been tormenting her little sister Asha, who was afraid of the water and was about to push her when Kai shoved Mina. Mina had grabbed at Asha when she overbalanced, so they'd both screamed, and Kai had been sent inside, at her own birthday party, to sit in glowering misery in her room while her friends ate her birthday cake and her mother, her own mother, made a fuss over Mina Patel. Her father now had his hands on her shoulders, pushing her gently back so he could give her that look.
You have to learn to think first, Kai Lara.
I did think. At least I thought I was thinking.
Well, I'm sure you meant well. Now we have to figure out what to do with you.
Kai had thought of that in the last moments before landing.
I could go to the university and finish a degree. I have almost enough credits.
No, we can't have that. You can't be here. There's too much publicity.
Oh, I could go to Darien Tech over on Seki.
No, it's out of the question. I've already decided. Who is it?
Kai's older brother, Sanish, opened the door and put his head in.
Me? Are you busy? Oh, Kai, you're here.
As if he didn't know.
Come on in, San. I was just telling Kai Lara what we came up with.
You were in on this?
All I did was look up figures. Don't blame me.
We weren't going to tell you until after supper, but since you were here a little early, and after all, your mother wants her time with you.
Kai's heart sank. While she'd been sitting, bored and miserable, in the plane on the flight out, they'd had time to plot out her whole life, probably. Just like when she was 13 and they'd decided that a trip in space as an apprentice on a Vada freighter would get that nonsense about the military out of her head.
We think it's clever.
Her father's glance at San told Kai exactly who he thought was the clever one in the family. Not her, of course.
You'll have a chance to prove yourself, and you'll be well out of the way.
Out of the way, like a naughty child. She was not going to cry.
Well, what is your marvelous idea?
We're sending you out to the Rift with a ship going to salvage. You'll have a cargo on the way out, sell the ship, then come back commercial. Altogether, it should take at least 11 months, and by then things will surely have died down.
Kai glared at her father and older brother.
You'd think I'd blown up a ship!
Don't be overdramatic, Kai. No one's accused you of anything like that. We're trusting you to do family business. It's an honor.
No, you're sticking me in a corner, hiding me!
We could do that well enough by giving you a job in inventory control right here at the Tick Plantations. Be reasonable, Kai.
But I'll be gone months and months, maybe years, and it's boring.
The heat will be off you by then, and it may not be boring. You'll be heading out into the borderlands.
Maybe.
Kai glared, but she already knew she would take the job. It wasn't as though she had any other choice.
Oh, I guess it's all right.
Good. You're taking the Glennis Jones to Lastway. We'll send you some help. Gary Tabai for Loadmaster. Quincy Robin as crew chief.
Dad, they're old!
They're experienced. You need that. New captains.
Captain? You're making me captain?
Were you listening? I offered you the ship.
I thought you meant as shipping agent or something. I don't really know how to captain.
You have a license.
I have a license, yes, but I haven't done it. I haven't worked on a commercial ship since tugboat. Turbot.
That's why we're sending along someone with experience. You'll do fine, Kai. All you have to do is be guided by Gary and Quince.
All she had to do was listen to her elders by the hour. But a ship, even an old wreck like Glennis Jones and a captain's listing, made up for a lot.
All right. Thanks, Dad.
That's better. Now, go over to the house. Your mother's waiting. Oh, and we've scheduled your implant replacement.
Kai knew better than to suggest a quick comm call instead, but she dreaded what her mother would say. Sure enough, she had scarcely come through the door when her mother pounced.
Kai Lara, how could you? You were just getting to know that nice Berlioz boy. And now...
Mother, I didn't...
And look at you. You haven't a bit of makeup on. How can you expect to find a young man if you go around looking like some tough off the docks?
Mother, please...
And your father says you're going away for months. And I've had no time at all to take you around. If you're out of circulation too long, you know, people will forget about you.
That's the idea.
If Charlie Berlioz forgot about her, that was all to the good. Despite her mother's prodding, she had no interest in Charlie... It was Hal. Except now it wasn't, almost certainly.
Well, it's all very well on the political side, but on the matrimonial side, it's a disaster. They'll go and marry unsuitable girls rather than you, and Slaughter Key is not exactly full of eligible boys.
At least her mother was still harping on marriage into some civilian family. At least she hadn't caught on about Hal, whom she would not have considered suitable.
Mother, I'm sure that eventually...
Well, we'll have to do something about your clothes.
Her mother started off down the hall. Kai trailed behind, feeling the same reluctance she had so often before. She knew what spacers wore and what ship captains wore, and she knew, without waiting for her mother to say so, that those simple outfits were not what her mother had in mind. When her mother opened Kai's closet, it was clear that someone had already unpacked her luggage and put things away.
Even if you are in the wilds of the borderlands, even there, you must be prepared to present yourself properly, perhaps even especially there.
When her mother was in one of these moods, it was easy to forget she was also a professional engineer of considerable reputation. It was the family background, Kai thought, being the eldest daughter of a socialite. For Grandmother Benton was still making news in the gossip columns with her endless string of admirers.
Oh, not this. Oh, not this either. I know you thought you'd spend the rest of your life in uniform, dear, but surely you had more sense than this.
She held out an outfit in rust and green, which, Kai had realized only after paying for it, made her look like someone a day away from death.
Sorry, Mother.
She eyed Kai up and down.
Oh, I don't care what your father says. You simply must get some suitable clothes. You aren't shaped like anyone else in the family. Worse luck. I can't just tell you to put some meat on your bones. You have meat. It's just not...
Mother!
Oh, be reasonable, Kai Lara. You'll be representing the family. You must have some clothes, and they must fit. I'm not saying you're ugly or misshapen. You're just not... Well, measurements first, and then we'll see what we can order. Shops here on Corley are useless, but... If something can be delivered to the ship before you leave, well, that will do.
The last thing Kai wanted to do was stand in the middle of the room while her mother ran a clothes scriber over her. But she stood in the middle of the room while her mother ran a clothes scriber over her anyway.
Stand up straight.
Halfway through, it began to be funny. Kai wasn't ready for it to be funny, for anything to be funny. But a bubble of laughter caught in her throat, and she could feel the corners of her mouth turning up. Here she was, back home, being measured for clothes yet again. Clothes that would, she was sure, turn out to be impractical and uncomfortable.
What? What are you laughing at?
Her mother didn't look up from Kai's knees.
Nothing.
Her mother continued scribing her lower legs, her ankles, her feet.
It's not funny.
It was, though. Everything else in the universe was horrible, but this one thing was funny. The dinner chime saved her from unseemly giggles. Her mother stood abruptly.
You will want to get out of that.
They both knew what that was. Kai took off the uniform she had been so proud to put on that morning, stepped into the fresher briefly, and put on loose slacks, blouse, and overrobe for dinner. She left the remnants of her past on the bed. Someone would take them away, clean them, fold them, put them somewhere. She didn't care where. Dinner on the wide veranda. Father, mother, and Sanish. Kai slid into her usual seat, facing the garden. Candles flickered in the evening air. Someone had gone to the trouble of preparing a festive meal. They had had, she realized, the hours she was in the air to put it together. The haunch of lope, boned and stuffed, and rolled in a pastry crust. The stuffed grape leaves. The Tower of Heaven salad. Once again, her body surprised her with its insistence on refueling. She ate ravenously, but barely touched the wine. Her father and San talked of island politics. Not the labor dispute, but such things as the proposed new desalinization plant, the possibility of a branch of the Central University on the island, the state of the waste recycling facility at Harbortown. Kai listened as if to a debate on the vid. It all felt unreal. Too many changes, too fast.
We have to have enough time to get her some clothes.
Her father and San stopped in the midst of telling each other what an idiot Councilman Krupper was.
How long?
I can get clothes off, world.
No.
Kai, you're going to be a Vada captain. You will represent Vada Transport. You have to start out with something suitable.
Gerard turned to his wife.
But Myris, it has to be quick. 3 days.
Impossible. We don't have a fabricator here. We'll have to go to Harbortown, and that's at least...
Less than an hour by plane. Glennis would have left tomorrow, but I put a hold on her. We can't delay. We have delivery commitments.
Delivery commitments were, her father had once said, a natural force. Vata Transport's default rate on delivery commitments was the lowest in the industry, and one reason for their wealth.
5.
4. Absolutely no more. And she doesn't need much. Captain's uniforms, shipboard and port. Not much more than that.
Kylara will start ordering after dinner. Bond tailoring will have to do. I would much rather you used Siegelson and Bray, but they can't possibly do it in less than a week.
4 days. You have the measurements. You can start without her. Tonight, Kai, we'll go by the clinic and get your implant in. That'll let you sleep on it, so you'll be in cycle in the morning. All loaded with the current codes and everything.
Kai had not had an implant since she left for the academy. Cadets weren't allowed them. She was used to doing without, though she had missed her implant a lot that first year at the academy. She was not sure she wanted one again. But she needed the extra capacity with all she had to learn in a hurry. She shrugged. Better an implant insertion than more talk about clothes.
I'm ready.